I cut through the Creswickies' yard. I didn't want my mother to do another freak out, so I took the sweatshirt off before I opened the back door. Sally, Valerie with the baby, my mother, and Grandma Mazur were at the kitchen table. "You're hiding from someone, aren't you?" my mother said to me. "That's why you keep sneaking in the back." "She's hiding from them gang members who want to kill her," Grandma said. "Does anyone want that last piece of cake?" "That's ridiculous," my mother said. "We don't have gangs in Trenton."
"Wake up and smell the coffee," Grandma said. "We got Bloods and Craps and Latin Queens, and that's just to name a few."
"I was in a rush this morning, and I didn't have time to take a shower," I said to my mother. "Is it okay if I shower here?"
"Of course it's okay," my mother said. "Did you really break up with Joseph again?"
"I moved out of his house. I'm not sure how broken up we are." My mother went still, radar humming.
"If you're not living with Joseph, where are you living?"
This got everyone's attention. "I'm staying in a friend's apartment," I said.
"What friend?"
"I can't say. It's a secret." "Oh, my God," my mother said.
"You're having an affair with a married man."
"I'm not."
"Isn't that something?" Grandma said.
Sally snapped the band on his wrist.
"What was that for?"
Grandma asked. "I thought a really bad word," Sally said.
"Yeesh.
I'm not going to discuss this," I told everyone. "This is stupid." And I flounced off to take a shower. An hour later, I was showered and shampooed, and I was peering into my mother's refrigerator. I didn't have nearly so much blubber hanging over the waistband of my jeans today. Amazing how the fat disappears when you stop eating. The downside was that I felt mean as a snake. "What are you looking for?" my mother wanted to know. "You've been standing there with the door open for 10 minutes. "I'm looking for something that won't make me fat."
"You're not fat," my mother said. "You shouldn't worry."
"She's got to be careful of the plum side of the family," Grandma said. "This is when it starts. Remember how Violet was always so thin? Then she hit her 30s and ballooned up. Now she has to buy 2 seats when she gets on an airplane."
"I don't know what to eat," I said, arms flapping. "I've never had to worry about weight before. What the hell am I supposed to friggin' eat?"
"Depends what kind of diet you're doing," Grandma said. "Are you doing Weight Watchers, Atkins, South Beach, the Zone, the Slime Diet, the Sex Diet?" "I like the Slime Diet myself. That's where you're only allowed to eat things that got slime, like oysters and slugs and raw bull's balls. I was going to try the Sex Diet, but I couldn't figure out some of the rules. Every time you get hungry, you're supposed to have sex. Only thing is, they didn't say what kind of sex you're supposed to have, like whether you should have it alone or with someone else. And what about that oral sex stuff? I never did a lot of that personally. Your grandfather wasn't much for experimenting," Grandma said to me.
My mother went to the cupboard, poured herself a tumbler of whiskey, and chugged it.
"So, what kind of diet are you on?" Grandma asked me.
"I'm on the tasty cake diet," I said, helping myself to a butterscotch crimpet.
"Good for you," Grandma said. "That's a good choice."
"I'm going back to work," I told everyone, putting my hood up, ducking out the back door. Mrs. Creswicky was at her kitchen window when I scuttled through her yard. She leveled a gun at me, sighting with one eye. I pushed the hood back and waved, and she lowered the gun and reached for the wall phone. Calling my mother, no doubt. I got into the Lincoln and drove to the office.
I heard from Lula at the courthouse, Connie said. Cantel's doing okay.
How about Ranger? Have you heard from Ranger?
Not a word.
Rats.
He wasn't supposed to be back for at least another week, but I didn't want to take any chances on being caught in his bed. Or, even worse, in his shower.
Connie's eyes fixed on my hat.
That looks like Ranger's hat.
He gave it to me.
It was a perfectly good fib. If he gave me his truck, why not his hat?
Connie looked like she bought it.
I wish Ranger would get his butt back here, Connie said. I'm not happy about you going after Rodriguez.
What kind of a person would carry a thumb around with him?
A crazy person?
It's creepy.
If you want, I can call Tank to go with you.
No.
Last time I went out with Tank, he broke his leg. Then his substitute got a concussion. I was hell on Ranger's Merry Men. Bad enough I was squatting in his apartment. I didn't want to compound the damage by wiping out his workforce. And if I was being totally honest, I'd have to admit the time spent with Tank was uncomfortable. Tank was Ranger's right-hand man. He was the guy who watched Ranger's back. He was entirely trustworthy, but he rarely spoke, and he never shared his thoughts. I'd reached a sort of telepathic state with Ranger. I hadn't a clue what was in Tank's mind. Maybe nothing at all. I'm a lot more worried about Junkman than I am about Rodriguez, I said to Connie.
Have you seen Junkman?
No.
Do you know what he looks like?
No.
Do you know why you're on his list?
Does there have to be a reason?
There's usually a reason, Connie said.
I can identify Ward as the Red Devil, and I bounced Eugene Brown off my Buick.
That could be it, Connie said. Or it could be something else.
Like what?
Connie shrugged. I don't know gangs, but I know something about the mob. Usually, when someone's targeted for takeout, it's about power, keeping it or getting it.
How does that relate to me?
If it's an entire gang that's out to get you, you move far away. If it's only one member, you can eliminate the problem by eliminating the member.
Are you suggesting I kill Junkman?
I'm suggesting you try to find out why Junkman has you on his list.
I'd have to penetrate the Slayers.
You'd have to catch one and make him talk to you, Connie said.
Catch a Slayer. It sounded like a kid's game.
You could hide out until Ranger gets back, Connie said.
What she meant was, I could hide out until Ranger gets back and eliminates Junkman for me. Ranger was good at solving problems like that, and it was tempting to let him solve mine. But that's not the sort of thing you do to someone you like. That's not even the sort of thing you do to someone you hate. Not when the problem is solved by murder. I'd already been there, and it didn't feel great. I was pretty sure Ranger had once killed a man to protect me. The man had been insane and determined to end my life. His death had been ruled a suicide, but in my heart, I knew Ranger had stepped in and done the job. And I knew there'd been an unspoken agreement between Ranger and Morelli. Don't ask, don't tell. Morelli was a cop, sworn to uphold the law. Ranger had his own set of laws. There were things that fell in the gray zone between Morelli and Ranger. Things Ranger was willing to do if he felt it necessary. Things Morelli could never justify.
I'll think about it, I told Connie. Let me know if you hear from Ranger. I'd parked in the small lot behind the bonds office. I left through the back door, got into the Lincoln, and I called Morelli. What's happening with Anton? I asked. Did he make bail?
It's set high. I don't think anybody's going to step forward for him.
Have you talked to him? Did he tell you anything interesting, like about Junkman?
He's not talking, Morelli said.
Can't you make him?
I could, but I misplaced my rubber hose.
You said Junkman was a hired gun, right? That he was from L.A.
We're not sure if that information is right anymore. The source hasn't turned out as reliable as we'd hoped. We know there's a guy out there who uses the tag Junkman. And we know he's working his way through a list. That's really all we're sure of.
And I'm on the list.
That's what we were told.
And that's what Anton confirmed. It would be helpful to know why I'm on the list.
Whatever the reason, it would help your cause if you'd quit your job and look like a non-threatening housewife. Or maybe go away for a couple months. These guys have a short attention span.
Would you miss me if I went away? There was a long silence. Well? I asked.
I'm thinking.
I called Lula next. Carol's up in about 10 minutes, Lula said. How are we supposed to get home? I'm on my way. Parking's a pain. Call me when you're on the sidewalk in front of the building, and I'll swing by and pick you up. I reached the courthouse and drove around the block. My phone rang on the second pass. We're out, Lula yelled. We got Carol with us, too. And we all need a bar. How did she do? Probation and counseling. It was a first offense, and she'd already paid for all the Fritos she ate. We had a lady judge who weighed about 200 pounds and was real sympathetic. I turned the corner and saw them at the curb. Lula and Cindy were smiling. Carol looked shell-shocked. She was ghostly white, clutching a bag of cheese doodles to her chest, and she was visibly shaking. They all piled into the back seat, with Carol sitting between Cindy and Lula. Carol doesn't know the court session is over, Lula said, grinning. Carol's in a state. We gotta get Carol a big-ass margarita. I drove over to the Berg, and I parked in front of Marsilio's. It was a nice, safe place to get a drink. If anybody messed with you at Marsilio's, Bobby V would kick their butt. Or, even worse, he'd make sure they didn't get a table. We guided Carol into Marsilio's, sat her at a table, and used the napkin to brush some of the doodle dust off her.
Am I going to jail?
Carol asked.
No, Cindy said. You're not going to jail.
I was afraid I was going to jail. Who would take care of my kids?
I'd take care of your kids, Cindy said. But you don't have to worry about it, because you're not going to jail.
Alan, the owner, rushed over with a margarita for Carol.
Am I going to jail?
She asked. 3 margaritas later, we poured Carol into the Lincoln, and I dumped her at Cindy's house.
Boy, Lula said, she was really hammered.
With any luck, she'd throw up a bag or two of doodles. Don't get me wrong, I love doodles, but they aren't exactly diet food when you snarf them by the truckload. It was late afternoon, so I took Lula to the office. I parked in the rear lot, and we went in through the back door. Connie was on her feet when she saw us.
I've got a bunch of files, she said. Everyone take a couple and put them away. I don't want another file mess. I took my stack of files and arranged them alphabetically. Joe tells me no one bonded out Anton Ward this time. He's being held on a big bucks bond, and no one has the collateral to cover it. His brother called, but Vinny wouldn't take the bond. The only way Ward's going to get out is with a signature bond, and no one's going to write a signature on Anton Ward.
What's the charge?
Armed robbery and accessory.
Ain't no justice in this world, Lula said. That scrawny piece of garbage will plea bargain and get off with a couple years.
Connie filed the last of her folders. I don't think he'll plea bargain. I don't think he'll talk at all. If he gives up any slayers, he's as good as dead.
There was a burst of rapid-fire gunshots from the back of the building, and we all instinctively went to the floor. The shooting stopped, but we stayed down.
Tell me I'm hallucinating, Lula said. I don't want to believe this.
After a couple minutes, we got to our feet and tiptoed to the back door. We put our ears to the door and listened. Perfectly quiet. Connie cracked the door and peeked out.
Okay, she said. It makes sense now.
Lula and I peeked out, too. The Lincoln was totally spray-painted with gang graffiti and riddled with bullet holes. The tires were shot out, and the windows were shattered.
Hmm, Lula said. Guess you're going to need alternative transportation.
What I needed was a new life. I felt myself gnawing on my lip again and immediately forced myself to stop.
You're kind of white, Connie said to me. Are you okay?
They found me. I was driving a new car, and I parked in the back, and they figured it out.
Probably Watts in the office, Lula said.
I'm trying real hard not to freak, I told them.
Play the role, Lula said. That's what we do. We pick a role and we play it. What role you want to play?
I want to be smart, and I want to be brave.
Go for it, Lula said.
Connie closed and locked the door. She went to the ammo storage area, rummaged through boxes, and came up with a Kevlar vest.
Try this on for size, she said to me.
I slipped it on, flattened the Velcro closures, and covered the vest with a hooded sweatshirt. Lula and Connie stood back and looked at me. I was wearing Ranger's black hat, black t-shirt, black sweatshirt.
It's the damnedest thing, Lula said.
Now, you don't just smell like Ranger. You're even starting to look like him.
Yeah, Connie said. How come you still smell like Ranger?
It's this new shower gel I bought. It smells like Ranger.
Can I fib or what? I'm gonna go buy a gallon, Lula said. What's it called?
Bulgari?
I was back to using Ranger's truck. I was parked 2 blocks from his building, waiting for the sun to set and the building to clear out. Another couple minutes and I thought it would be safe for me to make a move. I'd been waiting for over 2 hours. That was okay. It had given me time to think.
Connie was right. I needed to find out why I was on the list. Eventually, street crimes or the criminal intelligence unit would get the information, but I was having a hard time finding the patience for eventually. I'd had a stupid, crazy idea while I was at the bonds office. It was so stupid and crazy, I couldn't bring myself to say it out loud. Trouble was, the idea wouldn't go away. And I was beginning to think it wasn't so stupid and crazy. What I needed was a snitch. I needed to find a slayer who could be bribed into talking. I didn't have a lot of money to use as a bribe, so I figured I'd have to resort to violence. And then I needed to find the slayer outside of Slayerland. No way was I getting caught within Slayer boundaries. So, how am I going to catch a lone slayer out of his hood? Turns out, there's one sitting in jail. Anton Ward. All I have to do is bond him out, and he's mine. Okay, so I don't have all the details worked out, but it has potential, right? The sun was down, and the streets were empty. Time to take a look at the building, I decided. I locked the truck, I pulled the hood over Ranger's ball cap, and I walked the 2 blocks to the gate. Floors 5 and 6 were lit, and there was a single window showing light on the 4th floor. Only the night guard was left in the lobby. Now or never, I thought. I remoted myself through the gate, crossed the garage, and took the elevator without a hitch. I let myself into the apartment and relaxed. The apartment was nice and empty, just as I'd left it. I dropped the keys to the truck and the dish on the sideboard. I shrugged out of the sweatshirt and vest and went to the kitchen. Rex was running on his wheel. I tapped on the side of the cage and said hello. Rex paused for a moment, whiskers twitching. He blinked once and went back to running. I opened the refrigerator and looked inside. Then I looked down at my waistline. Still some fat oozing over the top of my jeans, but there was less fat than yesterday. I was moving in the right direction. I closed the refrigerator door and hustled out of the kitchen before the beer got to me. I watched television for a while, and then I took a shower. I told myself I was taking a shower to relax, but the truth was I wanted to smell the soap. Sometimes I was able to forget I was living in Ranger space. Tonight wasn't one of those times. Tonight, I was very aware that I was using his towels and sleeping in his bed. It was a kind of Russian roulette, I thought. Each night I walked into the apartment and spun the barrel. One of these nights, Ranger would be here waiting for me, and I was going to take it between the eyes. I toweled off and went to bed in panties and t-shirt. The sheets were cool and the room was dark. The panties and t-shirt felt skimpy in Ranger's bed. I would be much more comfortable if I was fully dressed. Socks, jeans, 2 or 3 shirts buttoned to the neck, tucked into the jeans. Maybe a jacket and hat. It was the shower, I decided. The hot water and the delicious soap. And the towel. It had me all overheated. I could fix that, but I'd go blind. At least that was the threat when I was growing up in the burg. You abuse yourself and you'll go blind. It hadn't totally stopped me, but it had me worried. I really didn't want to go blind. Besides, what if I was in the middle of something and Ranger walked in? Actually, that sounded pretty good. No, it didn't sound good. What was I thinking? I was sort of attached to Joe. Maybe. So where the heck was he when I needed him? He was at home, probably. I could go over there, I thought. I could walk in and tell him I'd just taken a shower with this great soap that always makes me feel sexy. And then I'd explain to him how I got carried away with the towel. Good grief. I switched the light on. I needed something to read, but there were no books, no magazines, no catalogs. I wrapped myself in Ranger's robe, curled up on the couch, and turned the television on. I woke up to the Today Show. I was still in Ranger's robe. I was on the couch. And I was feeling cranky. It didn't help that Al Roker was on the television screen talking to some woman from Iowa, and Al was looking happy as could be. Al always looked happy. What's with that? I said goodbye to Al and beamed the television off. I dragged myself into the bathroom, but decided to forego the shower. I brushed my teeth and got dressed in the clothes on the floor. I was desperate for coffee, but it was almost 8 o'clock, and I needed to get out of the building. I clapped Ranger's hat on my head, stuffed myself into the vest and sweatshirt, and took the elevator to the garage. The elevator doors opened just as a car approached the gate. I flattened myself against the side and returned to the 7th floor. I waited in the 7th floor foyer for 10 minutes, and I tried it again. This time, the garage was empty. I left the garage, and I walked to the truck. The sky was overcast, and the misting rain had started to fall. The buildings on either side of Comstock were red brick and cement. No trees, no shrubs, no lawns to soften the landscape. It felt nicely urban when the sun was shining. Today, it felt grim. I drove to the office and parked the truck in full view on the street. Connie was already at work. Lula hadn't yet arrived. I saw no sign of Vinny. I went straight to the coffee pot and poured out a cup for myself. I haven't seen a lot of Vinny lately, I said to Connie. What's the deal? He's got hemorrhoids. He comes in for an hour to bitch and complain, and then he goes home to sit on his rubber donut. Connie and I both smiled at this. Vinny deserved hemorrhoids. Vinny was a hemorrhoid. I sipped my coffee. So you're the one writing bonds now? I'm doing the low money bonds. Vinny gets off his donut to do guys like Anton Ward. I need a favor. Uh-oh, Connie said. I got a bad feeling about this. I want you to help me bond out Anton Ward. I need to talk to him. No way. Nope. No can do. Forget it. This was your idea. You were the one who said I had to find out why I was on Junkman's list. And you think Ward is going to tell you out of gratitude? No. I was planning on beating it out of him. Connie considered that. Beating might work, she said. Who's going to slap him around? Me and Lula. You could do it too if you want. So let me get this straight, Connie said. We bond him out. Then we escort him from the jail to the trunk of Lula's Firebird and take him somewhere for further discussion. Yeah. And then, when we're done, we can revoke his bond. I like it, Connie said. Did you think of this all by yourself? Yep. Think of what all by herself? Lula said, swinging through the front door. Man, it's crappy out there. It's gonna rain cats and dogs all day. Stephanie's got a plan to bond out Anton Ward and beat some information out of him, Connie said. Lula's mood changed to smiley face. No shit. Are you messing with me? That's inspired. You aren't gonna leave me out, are you? I'm good at smacking people around. And I'd just love to smack Anton Ward around. You're in, I said to Lula. We just have to figure some things out first. Like, where are we going to take him for his beating? It has to be someplace isolated, so no one hears him screaming, Lula said. And it has to be cheap, I said. I haven't got any money. I have just the place, Connie said. Vinny has a house in Point Pleasant. It's right on the beach, and no one's going to be around now. The season's over.
That's a great plan, Lula said. The arcade will still be open, and in between beating on Anton Ward, I can play the claw machine.
Do you think we'll have to beat him a lot? I asked Connie. A bunch of her relatives were mob, and I figured she knew about these things.
I hope so, Lula said. I hope he don't talk for days. I love Point Pleasant. And I haven't beat on anyone in a while. I'm looking forward to this beating.
I've never actually beat anyone, I said.
Don't you worry about it, Lula said. You just stand back and leave it to me.
We have to do this right, Connie said. We don't want anyone to know we have Ward. We're going to have to make it look like he just disappeared. I've already thought it through, I said. You can call Ward's brother back and tell him we'll bond Ward out if he agrees to wear a personal tracking unit. We just got one in from iSecureTrack, right?
We haven't used it yet, Connie said. Haven't even taken it out of the box.
If Ward agrees to the PTU, we say we have to have him released into our custody so we can install the unit. Then we tell everybody we have to install the transmitter here at the office. We tell them after the unit is in place, Anton is free to go. We cuff Anton on his release and bring him back to the office. But instead of strapping the transmitter on him, we dump him in Lula's trunk. All she has to do is back up to the rear door, and Anton's off to Point Pleasant. Then we pretend Anton escaped. We can say he used the lavatory at the office, and he went out through the window.
Brilliant, Lula said. You're a criminal genius.
I like it, Connie said. Let's do it.
We all did a high five.
It'll take me some time to set this up, Connie said. I'll arrange it for the end of the business day. Then it won't be suspicious if we close the office down and disappear. In the meantime, you two should take a drive to Point Pleasant and make sure it's okay to use the house. She took a key from a mess of keys she kept in her top drawer. This is the key to the house. He doesn't have a security system. It's just a little bungalow on the beach. She wrote the address on a sticky note and gave it to me. Lula and I didn't do a lot of talking on the way to Point Pleasant. Hard to say why Lula fell into silence. Mine was brought on by a mixture of disbelief and terror. I couldn't believe we were going to do this. It was insane. And it was all my idea. I was driving Ranger's truck, and Lula was reading the map. We'd reached the ocean, and we were looking for Vinny's street. The rain was steady, and the little shore houses that seemed cute and colorful in July sunshine looked sad in the dismal gray gloom.
You turn left onto the next street, Lula said. And you go all the way to the end. It's the last house on the right. Connie says it's painted salmon and turquoise. I'm hoping she's wrong about the paint.
This is like a ghost town, I said. Not a single house has a light on.
Better for us, Lula said. But it feels spooky, don't it? It's like we're in some horror movie. Nightmare in Point Pleasant.
I got to the last house on the right, and darned if it wasn't painted salmon with turquoise trim. It was a two-story bungalow that faced the ocean. No garage, but there was a driveway separating Vinny's house and an almost identical bungalow next to him. At this time of year, a car parked in the driveway would be reasonably well hidden. I pulled the truck into the driveway, and I cut the lights. Lula and I squinted through the rain to the bungalow's back door. Above the door was a hand-painted sign that said Sea Breeze.
Bet Vinnie had to think a long time to come up with that name, Lula said.
I put my hood up, and Lula and I sprinted through the rain and huddled together on the small back stoop while I fumbled with the key. I finally got the door open. We both jumped inside, and I slammed the door shut behind us. Lula shook her corn-rowed head, sending water flying.
Could we possibly have picked a crappier day to do this?
Maybe we should wait a couple days until the weather is better. The heartfelt, cold feet statement of the year.
I don't want to be no alarmist or nothing, but you wait a couple days, and you might not be around to beat on this guy.
Chapter 12. The back door to Vinnie's beach bungalow opened to the kitchen. The floor was yellow and white linoleum and looked relatively new. The counters were red formica. The cabinets were painted white. The appliances were also white. GE, mid-grade. A small white wood table, covered with a blue and white checked plastic tablecloth, sat to one side. There were four chairs at the table. Beyond the kitchen was a combination living room and dining room. The carpet was gold and showing wear. The dining room table was white and gold, French provincial. Probably confiscated from a bad bond. The living room furniture was overstuffed brown velour. Tasteful, in an upper-end whorehouse sort of way. End tables were dark fruit wood, Mediterranean style. Hand-stitched pillows with messages were everywhere. Kiss me, I'm Italian. Home is where the heart is. Summer starts here. There was a downstairs bathroom and a small downstairs bedroom. Both rooms looked out at the driveway.
Here's where we'll beat Anton, Lula said, standing in the bathroom. Just in case there's blood, it'll be easy to clean up with all this tile.
Blood? My stomach went sick, and little black dots floated in front of my eyes. Lula kept going.
And there's only that one little frosted window over the tub, so nobody can see us. Yep. This is gonna be good. Nice and private. No neighbors around. That's important on account of he's probably gonna be screaming in pain, and we don't want no one to hear.
I sat down on the toilet and put my head between my legs.
You okay? Lula asked.
I've been dieting. I think I must be weak from hunger.
I remember when I was dieting and I felt like that, Lula said. And then I discovered that protein diet, and I was eating all those pork roasts. I felt real good on the protein diet, except sometimes I'd overdo it, like when I found that sale on boiled lobsters, and I was eating all those lobsters and melted butter. I'm telling you, that butter went through me like goose grease.
I didn't want to hear about goose grease right now. I stayed on the toilet, taking deep breaths, and Lula went exploring upstairs.
There's two bedrooms and a bathroom up there. Nothing special. Looks like it's for kids and guests, Lula said, returning to the bathroom.
Maybe we should get you food. I didn't need food. I needed someone to intervene and stop me from kidnapping a guy and beating him bloody. I left the bathroom and walked through the living room to the front door. I opened the door and stepped out onto the covered front porch. There was a minuscule front yard, just big enough for an aluminum and nylon webbed chaise and small table. A boardwalk ran the length of the beach, for as far as the eye could see. Beyond the boardwalk, the wet sand was the color and texture of fresh concrete. The ocean was loud and scary. Big gray rollers crashed onto the beach, conjuring visions of tsunamis barreling in, gobbling up Point Pleasant. The wind had picked up, driving the rain across the porch in sheets. I retreated back into the house and locked the door. We pulled every shade and closed every curtain, and then we left. I called Connie when we hit Whitehorse. "What's up?" I asked. "It's all set," Connie said. "Ward and his brother bought the whole enchilada. Ward's being held at the prison on Cass Street. I have to get there before 4 o'clock to bond him out." I picked Connie up at 3:30 and dropped her at the prison. We decided Ward might not be happy to see Lula and me, so we waited in the truck. In a half hour, Connie emerged with Ward cuffed behind his back. Ranger's truck was a four-door Super Crew cab with a full back seat and steel rings conveniently bolted into the floor, just right for securing leg shackles. Connie got in back with Ward, and I swung the truck out into traffic. Ward didn't say anything, and I didn't say anything, and Lula didn't say anything. All of us being careful not to rock the boat. Ward thinking he was going home, and Lula and Connie and me thinking we were going to beat the crap out of him. I parked curbside when I reached the office. We took our time offloading Ward, making a show of it as best we could in the rain. We wanted people to witness the fact that we'd brought him this far. The whole time, I was having heart palpitations, and I couldn't get the phrase "hair-brained scheme" out of my head. We finally brought him inside and sat him in the chair in front of Connie's desk. The plan was to give him a shot at talking to us. If he refused to cooperate, we'd hit him with a stun gun, blindfold him, and trundle him out to the Firebird. "I want to know about Junkman," I said. He was slouched in the chair. Hard to do when your hands are cuffed behind your back, but he managed. He cut his eyes to me under half-lowered lids. Sullen. Insolent. He didn't say anything. "Do you know Junkman?" I asked. Nothing. "You better answer her," Lula said. "Otherwise, we might get upset, and then I'd have to sit on you again." Ward spit on the floor. "That's disgusting," Lula said. "We don't put up with that. You don't watch your step, I'll give you enough volts to make you pee your pants." And she showed him her stun gun. "What the hell's this?" Ward said, sitting up straighter. "I thought I was supposed to get hooked up to a monitor. What's with this stun gun bullshit?" "We thought you might want to talk to us first," Lula said. "I got rights. I'm being violated," Ward said. "You got no business keeping me cuffed. Either put the fucking monitor on me or turn me loose." Lula got into his face and wagged her finger at him. "Don't you use that language in front of ladies. We don't tolerate that." "I don't see no ladies," Ward said. "I see a big, fat, black..." And he used the C word, the mother of all swear words, even better than the F word. Lula lunged at him with the stun gun, and Ward jumped out of his chair. Connie was on her feet, too, trying to contain the disaster. "Don't let him get to the door," she yelled. I sprang into action, blocking his way. He turned and ran for the back door. Connie and Lula both had stun guns in hand. "I got him, Lula shouted. Ward lowered his head and gave Lula a headbutt to the stomach that knocked her on her ass. Connie rounded on him in a crouch, and they sized each other up. Ward sidestepped and bolted around her. He wasn't smart, but he was nimble. I took a flying leap and tackled him from behind. We both went down. I rolled off, and Connie swooped in and tagged him with the stun gun. Ward said, and he went inert. We all popped our heads up to see if anyone was looking in the front window. "We're in the clear," Connie said. "Quick, help me drag him behind the file cabinets before someone sees him." 10 minutes later, we were set to go. Ward was cuffed and shackled. We wrapped him in a blanket and carted him out the back door to Lula's car. We dumped him in the trunk, and we all made the sign of the cross. Then Connie slammed the trunk lid shut. "Holy Mary, Mother of God," Connie said. She was breathing heavy, and her forehead was beaded with perspiration. "He isn't going to die in there, is he?" I asked Connie. "He can breathe, right?" "He'll be fine. I asked my cousin Anthony. Anthony knows these things." Lula and I didn't doubt for a moment that Anthony knew all about stuffing bodies in trunks. Anthony was an expediter for a construction company. If you treated Anthony right, your construction project moved along without a hitch. If you decided you didn't need Anthony's services, you were likely to have a fire. Connie locked the office, and we all piled into the Firebird. 20 minutes into the trip, Anton Ward came to life and started yelling and kicking inside the trunk. It wasn't that loud from where I was sitting, but it was unnerving. What must he be feeling? Anger? Panic? Fear? What was I feeling? Compassion? No. In spite of Connie's expert assurances, I was worried Ward would die, and we'd have to bury him in the dark of night in the Pine Barrens. I was going straight to hell for this, I thought. It was all adding up. I was for sure beyond Hail Marys. "This guy's creeping me out," Lula said. She punched a number on her CD player and drowned Ward out with rap. 10 minutes later, I could feel my cell phone vibrating. It was hooked to my Kevlar vest, and I couldn't hear the ring over the rap, but I could feel the vibration. I flipped the phone open and yelled, "What?" It was Morelli. "Tell me you didn't bond out Ward."
"There's a lot of static here," I said. "I can't hardly hear you."
"Maybe it would help if you turned the radio down. Where the hell are you anyway?"
I made crackling, static sounds, disconnected, and shut my phone off.
This ends Disc 10 Big Ones, Disc 7.
Hard to tell when the yelling and kicking stopped, but there were no sounds coming from the trunk when Lula parked in Vinny's driveway and cut the engine. It was still raining, and the street was dark. No lights shining from any of the houses. The ocean roiled in the distance, the waves thundering down onto the sand and then swooshing up the beach. It was pitch black when we huddled around the rear end of the Firebird. I had a flashlight. Connie had the stun gun. Lula was hands-free to open the trunk.
"Here goes," Lula said. "Here's the plan. Soon as I get the lid up, we want Stephanie to shine the light in his eyes in case the blankets come undone. And then Connie can zap him."
Lula opened the trunk. I switched the light on and aimed it at Ward. Connie leaned forward to zap Ward, and he kicked out at Connie. He caught Connie square in the chest and knocked her back 4 feet onto her keister. The stun gun flew out of Connie's hand and disappeared into the darkness.
Shit!
Connie said, scrambling to get to her feet. I ditched the flashlight, and Lula and I wrestled Ward out of the trunk. He was bucking and swearing, still wrapped in the blanket. We lost our grip and dropped him twice before we got him into the house. As soon as we were in the kitchen, we dropped him again. Connie closed and locked the kitchen door, and we stood there, breathing hard, dripping wet, gaping at the pissed-off guy writhing around on the linoleum. He stopped wriggling when the blanket fell away. He had big, baggy, homey pants that had slipped off his bony ass and were around his knees. He was wearing cotton boxers with red and white stripes. His oversized $400 basketball shoes were unlaced in hood fashion. He looked pretty bad, but it was an improvement over the last time I saw him. "This is kidnapping," he said. "You can't do this, bitch." "Of course we can," Lula told him. "We're bounty hunters. We kidnap people all the time." "Well, maybe not all the time," I said. Connie looked pained. Kidnapping wasn't actually allowed. We could detain and transport people if we had the right documentation. "If you stop flopping around, we'll stand you up and sit you on a chair," I told him. "We'll even pull your pants up so we don't have to look at Mr. Droopy hanging out," Lula said. "I've seen enough of Mr. Droopy to last a long time. It's not that great." We dragged him to his feet, pulled his pants up, and plopped him onto one of the wooden kitchen chairs, securing him with a length of rope that we wrapped and knotted around his chest and the chair back. "You're at our mercy now," Lula said. "You're going to tell us what we want to know." "Yeah, right. I'm real scared." "You should be scared. If you don't start talking about junk man, I'm going to hit you one." Ward gave a bark of laughter. "Okay, that's it. I guess we have to persuade you," Lula said. "Go ahead, Stephanie. Make him talk." "What?" "Go ahead and hurt him. Slap him around." "You're going to have to excuse us for a moment," I said to Ward. "I need to talk to my associates in private." I pulled Lula and Connie into the living room. "I can't slap him around," I said. "Why not?" Lula wanted to know. "I've never slapped anyone around before."
"So?"
"So? I can't just walk up to him and hit him. It's different when someone attacks you, and you get lost in the heat of the moment."
"No, it's not," Lula said. "You just be thinking he hit you first. You just walk up to him, and you imagine him punching you in the face. And then you punch him back. Once you get started, I'll bet you like it."
"Why don't you hit him?"
"I could if I wanted," Lula said.
"Well, then,
I just don't think it's my place. I mean, you're the one needs to know about Junkman, and you're the bounty hunter. I'm just a bounty hunter assistant. I figured you'd want to do it."
"You figured wrong."
"Boy, I never had you figured for chicken," Lula said.
I walked back to Ward and stood in front of him. "Last chance," I said. He waggled his tongue at me and spit on my shoe. I made a fist, and I told myself I was going to hit him. But I didn't hit him. My fist stopped just short of his face, and my knuckles sort of bumped against his forehead.
"That's pathetic," Lula said.
I dragged Lula and Connie back into the living room. "I can't hit him," I said. "Someone else is going to have to hit him." Lula and I looked at Connie. "Fine," she said. "Get out of my way." Connie marched up to Ward, squared her shoulders, and gave him a light slap.
"Geez," Lula said. "Is that bitch slap the best you can do?"
"I'm an office manager," Connie said. "What do you want from me?"
"Well, I guess it's up to me," Lula said. "But I'm pretty rough when I get going. He'll be all bruised and bloody and cut up and stuff. We might get into trouble for that."
"She has a point," I said to Connie. "It'd be best if he didn't look too beat up."
"How about if we all kick him in the nuts?" Lula said.
We repaired to the living room.
"I can't kick him in the nuts," Connie said.
"Me either," I said. "He's just sitting there. I can't kick a guy in the nuts when he's just sitting there."
"Maybe we should turn him loose. Then we could chase him around the house and get into the moment."
"No way," Connie said. "He already knocked me on my ass once tonight. I'm not giving him another shot at it."
"We could burn him with lighted cigarettes," Lula said.
We looked at each other.
None of us smoked. We didn't have any cigarettes.
"How about if I get a stick," Lula said, "like a broomstick, and then we could hit him like he was a piñata."
Connie and I did a grimace.
"You could really hurt someone like that," Connie said.
"So what we want to do is inflict maximum pain without hurting him?" Lula asked.
"Hey, how about sticking him with a needle? I hate when I get stuck with the needle. And it only makes a tiny hole in you."
"That has potential," Connie said.
"And we can stick him in places that won't show."
"Like his dick," Lula said. "We could use his dick for a pincushion."
"I'm not touching his dick," I said.
"Me either," Connie said.
"Not even with rubber gloves."
"How about his feet? You could stick the needle between his toes, and then nobody would see it."
"I bet you got that idea from Anthony," Lula said.
"Dinner table conversation," Connie said.
We fanned out and looked for a needle. I took the downstairs bedroom and found a sewing kit in the closet. I selected the biggest needle in the kit, and I brought it into the kitchen.
"Who's going to do this?" I asked.
"I'll take his shoe off," Connie said.
"And I'll take his sock off," I said. That left Lula with the sticking.
"I bet you think I can't do it," Lula said.
Connie and I made some encouraging sounds.
"Hmm," Lula said, and she took the needle.
Connie took Ward's shoe off. I removed his sock. Then Connie and I stepped back to give Lula room to operate. Ward was looking nervous, and he was shuffling his shackled feet around.
"This here's a moving target," Lula said. "I can't do my best work like this."
Connie got another length of rope and tied Ward's ankles to the chair legs.
"This little piggy went to market," Lula said, touching the little toe with the tip of the needle. "And this little piggy stayed home."
"Just stick him," Connie said.
Lula grabbed Ward's big toe, closed her eyes, and ran the needle into Ward dead center between two toes. Ward let out an unearthly scream that raised every hair on my body. Lula's eyes flew open. Her eyes rolled back into her head, and Lula crashed over in a dead faint. Connie ran into the bathroom and threw up. And I staggered outside and stood in the rain on the front porch until the clanging stopped in my head. By the time I got back to the kitchen, Lula was sitting up. The back of her shirt was soaked in sweat, and sweat beaded on her upper lip.
"Must have been something I ate," she said.
The toilet flushed, and Connie joined us. Her hair was a wreck, and she'd washed off most of her makeup. It was a sight that was more frightening than Lula with a needle.
Ward's eyes were dilated black. If looks could kill, we'd all be dead.
So, are you ready to talk? Lula asked Ward.
Ward shifted the death look to Lula.
So,
Lula said. We all went into the living room.
Now what? I asked Connie and Lula.
He's pretty tough, Lula said.
He's not tough at all, I said. He's a jerk. We're a bunch of wimps.
How about if we lock him up here and don't give him any food, Lula said. I bet he'll talk when he gets hungry.
That could take days.
Connie looked at her watch.
It's getting late. I should be heading for home.
Me too, Lula said. I gotta get home to feed the cat.
I looked over at Lula. I didn't know you adopted a cat.
It's more like I'm thinking about it, Lula said. I'm thinking of stopping at the pet store on the way home and getting a cat. And then I'm going to have to feed him.
So what are we going to do with this idiot? Connie asked.
We swung our attention back to Ward. I guess we leave him here for now, I said. Maybe we can think of something overnight. We cut the ropes away, stood Ward up, shoved him into the bathroom, and cuffed him to the main pipe of the pedestal sink. He had one hand free, and he was within reach of the toilet. We removed everything from the medicine chest. We left the ankle bracelets in place and attached an extra length of chain to the shackle and wrapped the extra chain around the base of the toilet. Then we closed the door on him.
This feels a little like kidnapping, I said.
No way, Lula said. We're just detaining him. We're allowed to do that.
I'm thinking about changing careers, Connie said. Something more sane, like being the detonator on the bomb squad.
We turned the lights out and locked up. We piled into Lula's car and left Point Pleasant.
I never even got to play the claw machine, Lula said.
Ranger's truck was still parked in front of the bond office. It wasn't covered with graffiti or riddled with bullet holes. I thought that was a good sign. I got out of the Firebird and unlocked the truck with the remote. Then I stood back, held my breath, and started the truck with the remote. I blew out a sigh of relief when the truck didn't explode.
You're in business, Lula said. See you tomorrow. Be careful.
I got into the truck and locked the doors. I sat there for a moment in the dark, enjoying the silence, not sure what to think of the day. I was tired. I was depressed. I was appalled. I jumped when someone rapped on the driver's side window. I sucked in some air when I saw the guy. He was big, over 6 feet. Hard to tell his build in the dark, but I was guessing he was heavily muscled. He was wearing an oversized black hooded sweatshirt, and his face was lost in shadow inside the hood. His skin in the dark looked as black as a sweatshirt. His eyes were hidden behind dark glasses. He could be one of Ranger's men, or he could be a messenger from the dead. Either way, he was freaking scary. I released the emergency brake and put the truck in gear in case I